You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
This is episode 317 of the Colombia Calling podcast. I'm Richard McCall here, your host in Bogota, Colombia. My guest this week, as we're doing a one-segment show, is Adrian Alsamer. You'll know him. He's been on the show many times. He's the director of Colombia Reports. He's based in Medellin. Before we start, I'd like to say that this is a serious show because, of course, what's going on in the world is troubling. These are troubling times, and seeing our politicians handling or mishandling the situation is always of great concern. Our thoughts and our hearts go out to those people suffering or who have loved ones who have caught the coronavirus, COVID-19. We wish you a speedy recovery. And of course, please, please, please heed the warnings that are out there. Do distance socially from people, self-isolate. Do take into account the quarantines that are on. Do avoid large groups of people. Wash your hands is what they're saying. Just do everything you possibly can, because our world, as we knew it, is, well, it's irreversibly changed. But before we go into the coronavirus, and we will, of course, go into the coronavirus because we have to, and Colombia is going to be incredibly affected. Let me just say that we're recording this on Saturday night, the 21st of March. So in the 2 days, the 3 days, the 2.5 days it takes for this podcast to come out, things will have changed. Presently, the actual official number of people who've got coronavirus here in Colombia is around 200. So we can expect that curve to increase exponentially in the next couple of days. But before we go into the coronavirus, as I was saying, with Adrian Alsamer, we're going to talk a little bit about what was going on in Colombia just the same days as the coronavirus was coming into being. And it really was perhaps the most important and the most troubling scandal taking place politically in Colombia. And of course, it's known locally as Ñeñe Gate because it's referring to Ñeñe Hernández. And it's the perfect and the most complete link revealed by telephone wiretapping or recordings between the political wing of Colombia's elite and then, of course, the narco-trafficking wing. It's the complete package. But of course, with the coronavirus, and justifiably so, this story, unfortunately, has been pushed to the wayside somewhat. So let me introduce my guest, Adrian Alsamer. Thank you again for agreeing to be on the show. I know you're incredibly busy these days because of what's going on. Let's start a little bit. You're in your barrio in Medellin and writing your articles, and you continue to hammer away and tell the corruption story here in Colombia. Perhaps you could give us a little bit of a background.
The background is that there are serious indications that the president may be illegitimate because of the election fraud in the 2018 elections. I'm not yet saying he is illegitimate, because that would depend on the volume of the fraud, like how big it was and if it actually was like a decisive factor. But there's proof that the Democratic Center Party and specifically the personal assistant of former President Alvaro Uribe conspired with a late money launderer of Marquitos Figueroa, a drug trafficker from Guajira. They are on tape conspiring vote buying in the north of Colombia. And there is also on tape a conversation of Uribe's assistant saying that Uribe sent money to Antioquia, to the town where his cousin Mario is from. And these conversations took place 2 weeks before the second round of the presidential elections. So with these recordings, and these recordings are part of only one murder investigation. They coincidentally revealed the fraud conspiracy. They're not even part of like an actual investigation into election fraud. So in just like this one murder investigation, there is evidence of the Democratic Center Party of President Ivan Duque conspiring with a drug trafficking organization to buy votes in two provinces, La Guajira and Cesar. There's an allegation made in one of the wiretaps about Duque, about the narco guy setting up a meeting between Duque and mayors from the Magdalena province make sure that these mayors would use their or abuse their institutional capacity to secure more votes for him there. And there's an allegation by Uribe's own personal assistant that Uribe sent 100 million pesos, which is about $25,000, to the town where his cousin lives in Antioquia. So there's evidence that there could have been vote buying in four provinces coming from just one murder investigation. So not even into an investigation into election fraud, because I believe it's reasonable to suspect that this was happening on a national level.
Well, yeah, I mean, if that comes out of one recording, one wiretap that we get.
No,
that.
not one wiretap. Okay. The wiretapping of one person.
Okay,
El Nene Hernandez was wiretapped for quite a while, maybe 2 years. And there are about 35,000 wiretaps of just his phone. Hmm. And from these wiretaps, links have been proven between the Democratic Center Party and the drug trafficking organization of Marquitos Figueroa.
And we know Nene Hernandez was killed in suspicious circumstances. They're calling it a robbery in sort of rural Brazil last year at a cattle fair, is what I understand. And so, of course, he's not here to share his side of the story. But I'm curious about this because, we're looking at vote buying or vote manipulation or whatever, Magdalena, Antioquia, Cesar, Guajira. There are a significant amount of votes, not maybe Guajira, but Antioquia and Magdalena, these are significantly populated departments. There is a probability that Duque is an illegitimately elected president. I mean, of course, I've seen and Gustavo Petro, the opposition, is frankly quite noxious at the moment. I mean, he can't stop ranting on social media, but he's got a point at the moment, given this. And he, you know, as we put it into context, is the first ever real left-wing candidate to win more than 7 million votes in an election. You know, this is a country bathed in the stigma of the left wing. So let's talk about
by the older generation, yeah. like Gustavo Petro has been running on a progressive agenda, not particularly a left wing agenda. But he's at the time of the elections, he was promoting like a diversification of the economy, like making it less reliant on oil, for example. Well, there's nothing left wing about that.
Not at all.
For example, like taking better care of the environment. Like you could associate it with the left, but it's not like the traditional left of socialist or social democratic policies. It's just like a new agenda that's more on the mind of young people, like who are more concerned about the environment, for example, and need jobs.
But coming back, let's come back to this, the Nyenye Gate. And so, I mean, the name of the name pops up every now and then in these recordings of former President Alvaro Uribe
and Duque himself.
And Duque himself. And so let's say there's a sort of mudslinging fight, and the Centro Democrático said in a press release that they've been behaving appropriately. And has Duque mentioned anything? I don't know. But they both say they didn't know Nyenye Hernandez, but there's just too many images out there. There's too many photos of Nyenye Hernandez with, people of note, military generals, politicians, the Cha family, Uribe himself, Duque on several occasions,
the finance minister, the interior minister, the former defense minister, it kind of shows like how drug trafficking kind of like works like within the Colombian system, or how it is infiltrated in the democratic system. Nyenye Hernandez comes from a conservative party family, but he's been involved in like all kinds of like dodgy dealings like since he was young. Mm-hmm. However, because of his privileged upbringing, he's been able to like stay out of prison. Like we're still saying he's an alleged money launderer, because like even though like all his assets have been seized because he's a fucking money launderer, there never has been a conviction. Also because he was killed before there could ever be a conviction. And if you look at Marquitos Figueroa, for example, the actual drug trafficker, he comes from like a modest background. Like he was just like a poor guy trying to climb up the ladder, and the only way to do it is through drug trafficking. Then when you reach like a certain level, like on that social ladder, that's when you get associated with like the traditional elites. And you notice that these traditional elites are in charge of the money laundering aspect of the whole drug trade. And in the case of Ñeñe Hernández, in one prosecution report, like he was called like the political arm. So like his job basically within the organization was basically to make sure that to have the best kind of relationships with people in politics, with anti-narcotics police, with the military, in order to secure as much impunity and frustrate criminal investigations as much as possible.
Now, I mean, you know, so I mean, it's just kind of obviously it's just another thing. But this is really, I mean, this is a really big scandal. Of course, it's been obviously overtaken by what's going on. But the journalist or journalists who broke this story, Señor Guillén. I mean, he's of great note, this journalist, and I know that others as well involved. They have been...
Gonzalo Guillén, who broke the story, he is arguably the best journalist in Colombia. This guy has been in journalism since 1975, if I'm correct, like, which is when I was born. this guy is of... this guy could be one of the best journalists, or at least like one of the journalists with the biggest balls in the world. That's currently walking around. However, according to the Foundation for the Freedom of Press, they have received an audio recording that criminal organizations are currently plotting his assassination and the assassination of two other journalists who are who were key in revealing evidence of the Democratic Center ties to drug trafficking. And that unfortunately, understandably, but unfortunately, is being overshadowed by the coronavirus.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, these are very credible threats. I mean, not just credible. The Fundación, no, it's received information, direct information that there is a plot against.
No, it's heard audio of these assassins plotting their assassinations. So the big concern is that the attention given to the coronavirus, which is due, also provides like the perfect smokescreen to assassinate some of Colombia's best journalists. Because not just Gonzalo Guillén is a wonderful journalist, Julian Martinez is an amazing journalist. Like, he's done tremendous work. And dark forces could take advantage of the current situation to just take him out, which would be a tragedy for journalism. Like at that point, like, no one is going to do any journalism.
Proper journalism, just not just the publicity reporting that's going on now in the mainstream stuff. It's very, very concerning. This very concerning indeed, and I lament that it's been pushed to the, you know, the back pages, if anything, of the press, even if it's covered. But we can rely on Gonzalo Guillén to continue to chase this story, unless, of course, these dark forces conspire and actually, you know, get together and do get rid of him, assassinate him. You know, I'm sure there'd be an outrage and an uproar, but we can't go out and protest because we're in quarantine in Bogota and we're in sort of kind of voluntary quarantine.
No, it's different. Like if they assassinate him, I'm out here. Like, like because well, what happened when he broke the story? His website was taken down, and he gave permission to all media to replicate the story. And I was one of the first to do it. And I received a death threat in August. I received an email this week that they have archived the investigation of the death threat. So they're not even investigating death threats. Like any critical journalist is just left at the mercy of the mafia. So if they kill him, then I'm out here.
It would be an immense loss to reporting in Colombia, and especially reporting in English about Colombia, if you were to go, because you know there would be there's no one to fill your boots, Adrian. Let me just say that you do a very important job, very important role that you fulfill for the Anglo-speaking world, and indeed the Hispano-speaking world, the Spanish-speaking world, because it doesn't come out all that often. I mean, these stories, sometimes you seem to be the only one reporting them. Now I'm going to finish praising.
Yeah, but here's the thing that a lot of people don't understand. Like, there's times that I literally need to like pop three tranquilizers before writing a story, because I'm just scared writing them. That's like I have parents too. I cannot put my mother through. It's bad enough for her that I'm not with her in the Netherlands. I'm not going to be the guy. I don't want her to suffer. So if the situation gets much worse, this is how censorship works. Yeah. You just make it impossible for people to do their job, and then they just stop doing their job, because I'm a journalist, I'm not suicidal. I just want to report. The same with Guillen. He just wants to inform the people about how the mafia is corrupting politics, which is an honest job. But if that means that's like an act of suicide, then you're just not going to do it.
Well, of course, as we say, and as everyone will say, all my listeners will say, please look after yourself. If you feel you're pushing too hard, do step back, Adrian. But one last thing before we move on to, obviously, the topic of the day. But one last thing when we talk about this is, okay, so Duque is implicated, President Duque. Former President Uribe is implicated. Will any of the charges, if there are charges,
they're investigated?
Yeah, will they
not,
stick?
Not just implicated. Well, Uribe's investigation is with the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has never thought twice about sending senators to prison. So Uribe is pretty much over and done with already. Duque will be more difficult, although he is so weak, and has been doing such questionable, like, he's of such questionable character, and mishandling the coronavirus situation, that Congress may decide that it's in the best interest of the country to just get rid of him. And that would mean actively prosecute him and throw him in prison.
I can see, you know what, I can see Uribe getting done for this. I always think that the image of Duque, or the image at least that they try to present of him, as a sort of happy idiot, whether that's me having the wool pulled over my eyes, the guy doesn't know where he's standing, and you know, and I think that ties us.
No, there's no. It's different. Like if Duque doesn't cooperate with his mafia buddies, he's going to get killed. Duque's life is in danger at the moment.
Yeah.
Period. Duque knows very well that if he opens his mouth, that he's dead. And just like the money launderer was killed, Uribe's personal assistant got the hell out of the country, knowing that like the minute that she blows the whistle, that she's dead. Everybody involved in that investigation, is at risk.
Yeah.
Or everybody involved in that or allegedly involved in that conspiracy is at risk. Because it's just common that if someone. Like, that's how the mafia works. Like, if you talk, you die.
Yeah. So, let's just say that the Nyanya Gate scandal, this huge scandal, and I said, you know, stronger governments have fallen with less, under less duress. But we're now into I'm talking Saturday here in Bogota. We're at our second day of mandatory quarantine. A simulation of a mandatory quarantine. This doesn't end until Wednesday, Tuesday. This doesn't end until Tuesday. And then we have the rest of the next one coming in for 19 days nationwide. What do we think's going to happen? What's going on here? Give us a bit of an overview of this COVID-19 coronavirus. Is Colombia handling it well?
Half well and half not. So there are a few lines of defense against a full blown outbreak, and of migration authorities.
Yeah.
In how they actually were a solid line of defense at the airport to reduce the number of people coming into the country that could plant the seeds that would from where contagion would spread. At the same time, there's been a complete absence of control on Colombians coming into the country, and this is where most of the local contagion now is originating from.
Mm-hmm.
That was a sort of a weak spot in the first line of defense. A very serious weak spot in the second line of defense is the weakness of the health system. So the health intermediaries called EPS are supposed to test people when they report symptoms of the virus, which according to the Comptroller General's office, they have not been doing. Mm-hmm. Which means that there are people walking around with symptoms who have reported them as just good citizens, but have not been tested and could be walking around thinking that they're okay.
Working in a market, working in a hospital, working, you know, anywhere, a taxi driver.
Exactly. So that's obviously this came out this week.
Yeah.
After that came out, things went like pretty fast because before the government was mainly like was grossly underestimating the threat of the virus, and was mainly concerned about trying to keep the economy running, which was a bit delusional because if you look at the global effects, we can assume that the Colombian economy is going to basically be non-existent within a few months. So after it came out that tests had not been done and that there could be a lot more cases of coronavirus than have officially been reported. At that point, and this was on Thursday, the president started taking things more seriously. On Friday, he met with a group of medical scientists and
epidemiologists.
Complicated words.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known it. My wife's one, so I wouldn't have known how to say it otherwise.
But and during that meeting, the president was visibly alarmed because immediately after that meeting, he took to national TV and announced the quarantine that's going to be in place tomorrow from this broadcast. There was kind of a the spread is still in a relatively early stage, so this measure could actually be on time to prevent an incredible amount of deaths, because the problem with the coronavirus specifically in Colombia is not so much the virus, but the fact that Colombia's health system is already saturated. So any increase in illnesses caused by anything could collapse the system. So for example, in Colombia, there's an estimated number of intensive care units with mechanical ventilators that allow people to be given oxygen. There's about between 8,000 and no more than 10,000 of these machines. While if the virus spreads, there could be a need for between 150,000 and 300,000 of these machines. At that point, the health system collapses, and this is a matter of like 2 weeks. And this means that not only can coronavirus patients not be treated, but nobody can be treated. Like if you break your leg and go to a hospital, there won't be a doctor available to fix your broken leg. If you get into a car crash, there won't be a hospital you can go to, and the concern is yesterday, Friday, I was like looking at news from my native country, the Netherlands. And I noticed that this was happening in the Netherlands already, like where hospitals were just unable to attend emergency care, which very much alarmed me, because like the Netherlands is like one of the richest countries in the world, mm-hmm. with one of the most robust healthcare systems in the world. And at that point, with only 3,000 coronavirus cases. So like if in the Netherlands, like that has like a well-developed healthcare system, 3,000 cases can collapse the system. Imagine what's going to happen here. The number of deaths could be in the thousands within weeks.
Yeah.
Now, fortunately, Duca got the message and ordered this quarantine, which could literally like prevent thousands of deaths. Had he not done it, he would have been responsible for a massacre of unimaginable proportions.
In
Italy alone, today in Italy alone, more than 600 people died, like on one day, and this is Italy. So if this is not just like coronavirus patients, but like just people who need care, but cannot get it and die. In Colombia, this could easily be multiplied. So Duca taking these drastic measures is likely going to save thousands of lives. Yeah. Although I believe because of the tardiness in his reaction, we should still prepare for a significant amount of deaths. The good thing of Colombia is its geography.
Mm-hmm. Could be the saving grace.
Yeah. So in the UK, for example, you got a train system. In the Netherlands, we've got trains and trams, and you got public trend, you got a public transport system that can easily distribute a virus to every corner of the country within a matter of hours. In Colombia, fortunately, the volume of travel is a lot lower. And a lot of people like farmers, for example, live a lot more secluded than in first world countries, which is a sort of a natural contingency already. So that could help, like that's kind of like a natural benefit of Colombia.
Yeah, the lack of infrastructure and the geography.
Exactly. At this point, it's always been like a problem because like it's detained development in the country. But at this point, it's a blessing, which means that what you're most likely to see is outbreaks within urban areas, while certain rural areas will be pretty much fine, because nobody ever goes there.
What about I worry about the sort of, let's say, the Latino or Mediterranean culture of big families, close families living in close proximity of one another. I'm English. We're cold, of course. We don't like physical contact or anything like that. Although I don't want to talk about England because I think we're going to get really, really hammered. I think we're being really, really hammered by it because of the poor decisions made there. But, we've got to think of the culture here a little bit about, do you think that could affect the spread of the virus?
Obviously.
You're stocking up with coffee there, Adrian.
I got a... If I don't inject caffeine, I may die. obviously, that's a problem because like I live alone.
Yeah.
So I've been pretty much in self isolation for a few days already.
Yeah.
Like I just stopped inviting friends because as a heavy smoker, I don't really want to catch that virus. However, especially in poor urban areas, like you got households where there are 8 people living on in very small homes, that's clearly a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm worried. I for one am worried, and I hope that this. I hope that this these measures taken by the government, and I've been quietly pleased. It's unusual for me to say that about the president's move, although he...
Me too.
He's a middle management administrator and he's been administering, and I think, that's what more can we expect from him?
There's a lot of there's plenty to criticize about the tardiness of decisions. But there will always be tardiness in decision making. Yeah. And Duque may have been sluggish.
Yeah.
But not if you compare him to Donald Trump, for example, or Boris Johnson or the Dutch authorities, these people have been like so negligent that you wonder if you really want them in office still.
Yeah.
So in that case, Duque would be in the top half of decision makers.
Well, I think we're going to have to wind this down, but you know, it's a very, very difficult time all over the world. I apologize for having my 2-month-old baby on my lap. This quarantining is a serious deal when you've got 2 children under the age of 5. But I hope that the measures taken by the Colombian government are enough to mitigate some of it. But we're going to have deaths, of course.
Well,
but there's
more that clearly I'm an anarchist. I do not rely on the government. People have personal responsibility. Yeah. The reaction to this threat is not only a government issue. It requires our personal involvement. It requires that we act responsibly. So for example, yesterday I talked to the administrator of the building where I live, that we should send one person shopping for the entire building, for example.
It does make sense.
So that type of personal involvement in being part of the solution and communal involvement in being part of the solution is probably more important than the government. And you saw it I thought Bogota was giving a great example where people were just in response to Duque's idiot attempt to revoke curfews and the organization of shutdowns. People were just okay, well then we'll just voluntarily isolate ourselves. I believe that type of personal responsibility and social responsibility needs to be promoted, because I believe that this is possibly more important than whatever government decision. We can't just go about do our things and let the government handle it. That's irresponsible behavior.
That's true. I mean, we can't have a nanny state look after us. It's about community. It's about civic duty. It's about looking after your neighbors, taking care of one another, and seeing how we can best
being a responsible citizen.
Yeah. Well, Adrian, I know that you're overworked and underpaid and undercaffeinated. I wish you all the best, and I hope you stay in good health in this coming weeks, and we can laugh about this or reflect upon it at least in several months' time, hopefully, if it's dipping away. I don't think it's going away fast.
No, this is going to expect on a global level that this is going to be highly disruptive for a year and a half. And of which we don't even know yet to what extent this is going to be disruptive. But expect this to be don't think this is going to be over in 2 weeks, because
no,
it's
no,
not.
Absolutely not. Well, I'll just say on a personal note that my businesses, a couple of small hotels the business has collapsed totally. I've taken tens of thousands of dollars now in cancellations, and I had a conference call with all of my workers, just saying to them, you've all still got jobs. As long as I can continue
to support your pay. You've also, because these are humble people. They live from hand to mouth and they rely on their work. So, you know, it's absolutely shocking.
It's good, especially in Colombia, but maybe also in other parts of the world. Like, we're going to have to take care of each other.
Yeah.
And really adopt a different approach to our neighbors and to our employees. Because if we don't, like, there's like we don't want a 50% unemployment rate in Colombia, which is not unthinkable, like facing the current crisis. So, like, if we don't help each other, if we don't show solidarity, like with our neighbors and with our friends and with our community, like we're not worthy citizens. Like, like this is going to require a thorough change of mentality, like where we stop being individual, individualistic, and really focus on more communal thinking. Like how are we going to make sure that the people in my building are going to be okay, that the people in my street are going to be okay, that the people in my neighborhood are going to be okay, like that this. Thinking more like in a communal sense is going to be like of vital importance.
Absolutely wise words, and definitely words that we should take fully into account. And let me just take this moment to say Columbia Reports obviously can be viewed online. That's columbiareports.com. And in order that Columbia Reports continues to tell us the important stories about what's going on in this country, you can sign up to their Patreon campaign, and for as little as $2 a month, make sure that independent journalism telling stories in English about Colombia continues. And Adrian, of course, is the director. Adrian Alsamo is the director of Colombia Reports. So anything you can do to support independent journalism is greatly appreciated. Adrian, let me take this moment to say thank you for your time. It's been, as always, a very enlightening conversation to hear your perspective, which is so on point in so many of the subjects that we deal with, especially the Nene Hernandez and now the coronavirus. Again, as I say, stay safe, stay healthy, please, and let's get together once this has passed.
Amen.
This has been episode 317, a one segment episode this week of the Columbia Calling podcast. We've been talking to Adrian Alsma, the director of Columbia Reports. I'm Richard McColl here in Bogota, Colombia. Thank you for tuning in. Numbers have dipped off a little bit since the pandemic has struck. But anyway, we continue to report despite everything. So thank you again. Please spread the word. And of course, tune in next week. It's a pleasure to be with you all here. Thank you again. Stay safe, stay healthy, and obey, then heed the rules and the advice of the healthcare professionals. Thank you all. Bye-bye.